I think people assume that things that he says that will seem radical or very left-wing and not acceptable to Michiganders, actually some of it is surprisingly acceptable to Michiganders.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark, and this week we're going to Michigan because if Democrats are going to take the Senate, the open seat that Senator Gary Peters is vacating needs to go blue again this fall. If you're not from Michigan, that's a Michigan, University of Michigan joke, I guess. But you have a primary with two candidates with a lot of baggage. You have Abdul El-Sayed, who's trying to notch another win for hard lefty candidates around the country. And you have Congresswoman Haley Stevens, who's thought to be more establishment and who has been roasted up and down on the internet. And we're going to talk about how regular people see her and whether or not the regular people and the internet have the same opinion. Because I suspect, as is often the case, the way Michiganders view her is a little bit different from how she's seen online. I'm not going to lie. This primary is one I really wish had been over for months. I just think, Michigan, I need you to hold your primary earlier. These guys are going at each other hammer and tong, and it's not going to have, a lot of time to kind of heal all these wounds before the general election. My guest today is Jonathan Cohn, the one and only author of the newsletter, The Breakdown, here at The Bulwark. Jonathan has a couple of skills that are very well suited to this episode. One, he lives in Michigan. I don't think that qualifies as a skill, but it is. But Connor included it as a skill. He's also, and this is a skill, the wonkiest person I've ever met in my life, including about this primary. Like, he's a wonk about healthcare policy and science, but also about this primary. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. And I'm honored to be the wonkiest person you know. That's great. That makes me feel wonderful.
Which is sort of saying something. Like, I am surrounded by political nerds and policy wonks, whatever. And you, my friend, wonk the hardest. Okay. Here's what I'm going to start with. I'm going to start with one of my favorite questions to ask on these shows, which is, what do you think is the difference between the national narrative on this race and the narrative happening on the ground? Like, are they the same? Are they different? Lay it out for us. You're there.
They're very different on a number of levels. I would say the first thing is the national narrative is very much informed by two things. It's informed by social media vibes, right? You know, this person has a video on, people are reacting to it. And it is also informed by what people think is going to, what matters in the national conversation, translating immediately down to Michigan. In reality, most people in Michigan are not terminally online. A lot of them are, but not a lot of, you know, there's a significant chunk of people who are terminally online and who are very engaged. And I shouldn't say terminally online. That sounds more negative than I mean it. You have a politically engaged group that are online, but they decided about this race a long time ago. They knew who they were going to vote for. There is a large number of people who are undecided. They care about local issues as well as national issues. And what they like in a candidate doesn't necessarily correspond to what people in Washington like for a candidate. And so, you know, for the longest time in this race, you know, Haley Stevens, I think if you were online and you were following Twitter, especially, or Instagram, you would have thought Haley Stevens was just awful and had no chance at all. Who could like this person? The reality is she is, you know, very much in the traditional mold of what has won elections here. She's like Gary Peters, the retiring senator, and Debbie Stabenow, this sort of, you know, nose to the grindstone, not necessarily the greatest communicator, but someone who is well known in the union halls, who works her district, brings back appropriations, that kind of old school politician. And so that, you know, that works. You know, at the same time, Abdul El-Sayed, like, he is also genuinely part of Michigan. And we can get into this. There's a whole identity politics level to this. And in ways that I think people assume that things that he says that will seem radical or very left-wing and not acceptable to Michiganders, actually, some of it is surprisingly acceptable to Michiganders. So I think, you know, on a lot of levels, If you're just following this race on Twitter, you're probably not getting it.
Is it fair to say Abdul El-Sayed feels like he's running like a national race? Like he is endorsed by these national figures, Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. A lot of the issues sort of tag on to the way that people who are interested in politics writ large, especially on the left right now, he feels maybe more directionally where the engaged set wants to go. And Haley Stevens maybe feels like she's running a more localized race where she just talks about auto bailout, right? Him, Medicare for all, her auto bailout. And I would say my one of the things that's funny about voters in a bunch of the races that we have done, including Maine and including Texas, is their response to these candidates. Like people nationally sort of fight ferociously on their behalf. I think it is, you know, obviously it gets ferocious on the ground, but when you talk to average voters, their response, like in Texas, this was very clear. They were like, oh, I like Jasmine Crockett and James Taurico quite a bit. In Maine, they were like, they wanted to vote for Graham Plattner because he was new and fresh, but they all really liked Janet Mills. Like they were, and Michigan's a little like that too, where when I listened to the voters, they were like, yeah, they both have some good ideas. And like, there's things I like about both of them. And it's not quite the going for the jugular. If you like this person, you identify with this. And if you like this person, you identify with that. Just to level set on this, as we get into the voters, and we're going to get into them pretty quickly because we got a lot of voter sound for Michigan. We've done a lot of different groups in Michigan because we've been sitting, we've known we were going to do this episode for a number of months. And so everybody you're going to hear today are Democratic primary voters in Michigan. So they've said they're going to vote in the primary. But I do want to stipulate a couple of things. These groups were generally more pro El-Sayed than pro Stevens, but they're also, on average, they were whiter groups than Michigan, and a lot whiter than I think the Democratic primary electorate is likely to be. And I think the polling really bears this out, that Stevens is doing a lot better with Black voters than white voters. But before we get to that, I just wanted to pick your brain about one other dynamic of this race, which is you wrote a piece about Mallory McMorrow dropping out. I was a McMorrow, but just cards on the table. I was mostly interested in McMorrow because I'd met her. She came to some Bulwark events. She's kind of a Bulwarky split the difference candidate there in this primary. And she was also new, was focused on affordability, and she just kind of flamed out. Why did that happen?
When we started the race, I think a lot of people nationally thought, you know, they looked at the profile and they thought, okay, you have El-Sayed, you know, or I'm going to say real quick, I'm going to call them all by their first names because we call them all by their first names here. They're all pretty young candidates. It's Abdul, Mallory, and Haley. Not meant as a term of disrespect, just I sort of fall into that habit. I think a lot of people who watching this nationally, you looked at the profile and Mallory just sort of seemed like the obvious perfect compromise between these two extremes, right? So you have this progressive who can really inspire people, but a little, you know, maybe too extreme for the electorate. You have this classic Michigan workhorse who can get stuff done, but really not a great communicator, not someone who's going to inspire a lot of people. And in Mallory, that's someone who, you know, she gives great speeches. She's a very gifted communicator, young and energetic, has some really strong stands she's taken in the past. You know, people may remember she kind of gave that great speech pushing back the groomer accusation. That's when she first kind of became a national celebrity. And at the same time, she's in the state legislature. She worked on bills. She got helped get a gun bill passed. She thinks kind of in a hard, you know, a kind of pragmatic way about what can I get done. You know, and the problem is in a primary, especially, the middle can be tough because you have these sort of committed progressives and they're like, yeah, you know, I kind of like Mallory, but I like Abdul more. And you have the people who are just, you know, they're concerned. They like that old school model, or maybe they're concerned about electability. They want the safest choice. They're like, well, Mallory, yeah, you know, she's pragmatic, but she's not as experienced as Haley. And by the way, she did take some progressive stands, and maybe that's going to hurt her. So I'm going to go with Haley. And so there wasn't a lot of space there. And then I also think, and Sarah, you do politics all the time. You can appreciate this. I think we all tend to undervalue how much experience matters in campaigning. She made a couple unforced errors early places where she said things that didn't really come off well that just sort of suggested she wasn't that practiced at being in the national spotlight and in the state spotlight under that much scrutiny. You know, Abdul had run in a statewide race before because he had run against Gretchen Whitmer in the 2018 primaries. And he's been a podcast host and he's been really just, he's been in sort of communication for a long time. And of course, Haley Stevens has run four congressional races. And, you know, I remember there was a quote, and I did a story when this all started, kind of laying out, you know, and I sort of talked about how Mallory looks like the Goldilocks candidate, but, you know, did she have the experience? And there was I'm trying to remember who said it now. I can't off the top of my head, but somebody made the point that, you know, there's a lot of really promising minor league baseball players who can't hit a major league fastball for a year or two. I think we had a little bit of that. You know, it's just, this was her first time running at this level. She'd only run in a small state legislature district, and I think that showed.
Okay, let's get to these voters. And I will just remind you guys, since I made it clear that these focus groups did end up just being by the virtues of how we find people for the groups. In this case, they ended up being whiter than the electorate. And so this is where I want to remind people, we do not use focus groups to be predictive. Okay, we know the contours of this race. We know that Haley is overperforming with Black people and for working class voters without a college degree. We know that Abdul is overperforming with white college educated voters. And so, like, those are facts in this race. And so our job is to understand why. Why are they appealing to these different cohorts of voters? And so that's why we talk to them, not to be predictive about who's going to win the race. Keeping that in mind, let's listen to what the pro El Sayed sentiment sounded like from these Michigan voters.
I'm not trying to be sexist or anything like this, but it's good to have that strong male character in the race right now, because hopefully things will get done. Hopefully, I'm not trying to be sexist, and it's my opinion, but hopefully things will get done, and Michigan, you know, hopefully be a stronger state with Democrats.
I've seen him. Social media all around. I work for Michigan State University. He was on campus giving talks to students and other alumni, people present in the community. I've seen more presence from him and hearing about things that have already been mentioned, but his stance against ICE, stance on Medicare, trying to create more equal and affordable housing. These are all the things that I can get behind. Maybe if McMorrow or Stevens comes and presents something a little bit different, something more, I guess, enticing to me, maybe I could switch over to them.
You kind of have two pipelines you can go through or go down. You have one that where you have a person that is more centrist. So by means of that, you know, has more widespread appeal. And then you have people who are honed in on target issues. Now, I liked El Sayed's campaign when he was running in 2018, because I think in some instances there are things that we do have to have a hard line on. I most likely would lean towards the direction of El Sayed, but I would not be surprised if Stevens won, because I know that being centrist, you know, does have more of a widespread appeal because it doesn't have that hard line on some of these points.
I like the platform. He's a Medicaid for all. Money out of politics is really important to me. And then a lot of the groups that I trust for endorsements have endorsed him.
If I had to vote tomorrow, it would be El Sayed, because I really like his Medicare for all message. And I feel like he really wants to sort of get at the roots of the issues in America. So, or in Michigan in general. So, like, you know, Medicare for all, working in terms of education, bettering education. I think those two issues are extremely important, because if those infrastructures work more towards the people, I do think that a lot of the issues that we would have along the years, I think would be better. I think people would be a bit happier. So I like how he's a little bit more focused. I don't know if I'm making sense. And I like his healthcare background as well. I think he studied to become a doctor, so I like that too.
If you look at the New York election the other night and you see how the DNC has responded to Democratic socialists being elected over hardline centrist Democrats, and they're acting like this is just communism coming to take over, this is the people saying that this isn't working. And if you look at Abdul's messaging, a lot of his messaging is, hey, the normal, like, old guard DNC way of things working isn't working. And we need to push back on that. I like his message in general about, like, hey, we need to get rid of Citizens United. We need to end gerrymandering. We need to, like, rein in the Supreme Court, whether that means adding more seats or limiting terms or getting rid of lifetime appointments. Like, the filibuster has to go. Those are, like, things that you're not going to see the more centrist or almost right-leaning Democrats push for.
I have a healthcare and education background, so El Sayed has always been kind of somebody in the back of my mind, just being, you know, similar-minded with occupation choices and things of that nature. But I just can't give, like, any definitive who I'd want to vote for, just because I'm one of those people who, prior to voting, I just like to see a lot of side-by-sides and compare, contrast, see which type of individuals are going for each of the candidates, and kind of making my decisions that way.
The ads I've seen for El Sayed have swung me to vote for him. I saw ads about him talking about abolishing ICE, and I've seen ads about him talking about healthcare prices. I've been affected by high healthcare costs, so that's a subject that hits home for me. And, you know, the people around me also influenced me to also vote for him. So those are the reasons why I haven't seen much ads for anyone else.
Medicare for all is really important. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and insulin and my insulin pump supplies are astronomical. They're so expensive. And thankfully, I've got pretty decent health insurance through my employer, but I'm a huge proponent. I've been in between jobs before. I've had to drive to Canada through Detroit to go buy insulin in Canada because I haven't been able to afford it here in the United States.
So, Jonathan, you are the Bulwark's in-house healthcare wonk, and you've seen a lot of healthcare debates play out within the Democratic Party. Is El Sayed making the Medicare for All pitch more effectively than other Democrats, or is this just an idea whose time feels like it's come with a certain segment of the Democratic Party that's like, this is the issue, and now they have a lot more buy-in from folks?
I mean, there's definitely some shifting politics on this in the public opinion, but I do think that a lot of this is Abdul El Sayed making this case very effectively for two reasons. And you heard it just now. I thought those focus group comments, I thought were emblematic of what I have heard when I've interviewed voters here, or even just in conversations with neighbors. First of all, people get his biography. I mean, he has a great biography for this. You know, he went to medical school, decided to become an epidemiologist. He was public health director for Detroit and Wayne County. You know, when he talks about his accomplishments, he says, you know, I got eyeglasses for kids. You know, I helped to make sure we were testing the pipes for lead. So, you know, he has credentials as somebody who cares about healthcare. And so he can use that. He does not take corporate PAC money, right? And this is very important because, you know, a big part of his argument is that the reason for all of you people out there, you're struggling with your healthcare costs, a big reason is that corporations, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, they are blocking action. You don't have to worry about that with me because I don't take their money. And then there's Medicare for All. And, you know, it's me, I could talk for hours about Medicare for All and different kinds of universal healthcare. You know, the wonk in me, the sort of policy wonk, will tell you that universal healthcare comes in many different flavors. Medicare for All, the idea of government providing insurance to everyone, is one of those flavors. It actually only exists in a few countries, although there are kind of variations on it in other countries. And we could get into a long debate about whether it works in those countries or how well it works in those countries, and could we do it here? But the way he presents it, if you sit at one of his events, he's not giving a policy seminar, right? He's not doing a Jonathan Cohn 30-minute PowerPoint on what Medicare for All works like, and this is how you would adjust the reimbursement rates, et cetera, et cetera. No, no, no. He says you'll have free healthcare. The government will pay for it. You don't have to deal with insurance, you know, company bureaucracies. You won't have big out-of-pocket costs. And whether or not you think that's realistic or not, that's what people are hearing. And that is what they find appealing. And I think that's a pretty good pitch at a time when people are really worried about their healthcare costs. And by the way, you're running against a guy in the general, if you get there, Mike Rogers, who's taken money from pharmaceutical companies and, you know, supported repeal of Obamacare, et cetera. So, you know, I think it's a pretty good pitch.
What about the whole notion of him as a doctor? Do you think people are taking him? I guess you just said you think so, that his background, even though it's become one of these weird points of contention, because is it a real point of contention, this idea that he has an MD but never practiced? And is that just semantics, people trying to dirty him up, or is it a real thing that he has kind of shaded his past on?
No, I don't think he shaded his past. I mean, the deal is, you know, there's a difference when you say a physician and a doctor, and a physician is someone who's practicing, and a doctor is someone who just has a medical degree. And he's the latter, right? So, you know, he went to medical school, and the story he tells is he decided he actually wanted to go into public health and epidemiology, and he got a PhD after his MD, or, you know, got a, you know, and then he became public health director for Detroit and Wayne County. This was one of those attacks that, you know, Mallory endorsed and really didn't hit that well. And I didn't think it should hit that well because, you know, he had occasionally described himself as a physician and maybe a few times talked about, you know, dealing with patients, you know, referring back to the very few times in medical school he had to be in rotations and such. You know, it was that like a deception, a grand deception? I never thought it was. I mean, you know, at worst it was a sort of, you know, a slight exaggeration. But the reality is, this is a guy who has spent his professional life helping people to get healthcare. And he has not just a medical degree, but additional training in epidemiology, which is, you know, its own field. So the idea that he's not a real doctor is really just garbage. And if anything, you know, the fact that he has sort of, you know, spent all this time dealing with some of the most needy people in this country, trying to help them get healthcare, I think most people look at that and think, oh, that's a plus.
So what about, I've also seen people, one of the critiques he gets is that his wife, who I guess is a practicing physician, doesn't take Medicaid or Medicare. I'm not sure which one. Can you set me, is that a real hit on them?
So there's, should it be a hit? Is it a hit? And, you know, yes and no to both. So the story here is that his wife is a psychiatrist and does not take Medicare.
She's a psychiatrist.
Yeah, she's okay. A psychiatrist, you know, MD, psychiatrist. But, you know, and very, very accomplished one. She's got, either her medical degree or is from Columbia. I mean, she's very well educated. She is a psychiatrist. She does not take Medicare. Medicare, reminder, people, you know, that's the program for the elderly, people over 65 and people with disabilities. Medicaid is for people who are low-income people. So she doesn't take Medicare. And that is actually very, very common in psychiatry. And if you've ever had to deal with trying to find a geriatric psychiatrist, it is a nightmare because most of them don't take Medicare. It's a really big problem. Has a lot to do with the fact that Medicare pays very, very low. This is a problem with Medicare that needs fixing. So people have now used that as a hit on Abdul sort of in two ways. They've said, well, number one, aren't you a hypocrite because you've said that, you're all about serving, you know, poor people, and here your wife, you know, and serving anyone, and you think it's wrong not to take Medicare, and here your wife is not taking Medicare. You know, people can decide from themselves whether they think it's fair, number one, to hold him responsible for what his wife does in her practice. Again, something that's very common because of a Medicare problem. On the flip side, like people have also said, well, wait a minute, you want to create a Medicare for all system. Isn't it true that if the government is deciding, you know, what to pay all providers, that you're going to run into problems like that? That is a fair critique of Medicare for all, although, of course, it's also a fair critique of the private sector. We have lots of the same problems with our system today, so it's not actually clear that Medicare for all would be worse. There is, however, I think a second layer to this, and this gets into an attack on him that Haley Stevens and her supporters have really pushed that I do think is resonating just based on what I'm hearing from people in interviews, which is she has really gone after him as someone who is a celebrity, a millionaire. You know, he had a very successful podcast. His wife makes a good, you know, salary. They were slow to file some of their detailed financial information. And the idea that, like, you know, here El Sayed is saying, I'm for the people, and actually he's well off. The Stevens people have made that into attack. Now, you know, I would say we have a long history of people who are well off and yet very effective champions for poor people. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt, you know, we think of as, you know, a great champion of the working man and poor, and he was incredibly rich. But I do think, I will say, I've heard it from people, I've interviewed people. People say, oh, you know, I don't like the fact that he's making so much money and is, you know, that does seem to be landing and having some effect.
Interesting. All right, well, let's move on to the pro-Haley folks or the people who were sort of putting out their pro-Haley sentiments in the groups. Let's start there. Let's listen.
I think she's the best suited based on her experience. I think it'd be quite a jump for the other two to go to the U.S. Senate from where they are.
I've been very proud to vote for her in primaries and general elections in my district. She's like, I know this is like in national surveys, everybody says, well, Congress is doing a terrible job, but my congressperson is good. But no, I really feel like she is. She has like what it takes to do legislation, to solve problems. Her whole approach is like, I guess this might be what Anthony likes too, because he was saying a minute ago, it's like everybody's like, well, here's the problems, but what about solutions? That really is something that Stevens works on.
I think she's going to be able to get stuff done because she's like a problem solver. So, and she's not too radical on the other side that she's not willing to make, you know, sacrifices for the greater good. So that's what kind of drew me to her. She knows how to negotiate and make deals and knows that you more than likely you're not going to be able to get 100% everything that you want.
With Haley, she's been in there. She has done, I think, a really good job with the auto industry, and she has the experience. I think she doesn't just talk and not do. I think she talks and gets things done.
She's got some really good press. And she's got some really good ads talking about how she helped save the auto industry with under President Obama. So I had forgotten that. And so that was a very good ad. And for me, it changed. Plus, I don't remember what it was, but something else I had did or said. And again, I don't remember what it was, but it was offensive to women. And so I was like, not really sure. I'll still listen with an open mind to either if they're going to have like a debate or something.
Being a retired auto worker, I guess that would be my loyalty to her. That's the least I could do to repay her being with President Obama at the time to save the auto industry. So that's my loyalty to her. If she wasn't running, I would go with Syed. But she has experience. She's held an office she knows what she's doing. I also feel that she would stand up to the president. As much as we want to get behind one of those two candidates, going up against Mike Rogers is who is more electable to beat him. And I would think that more Democrats, again, just my feeling, would get behind Haley Stevens.
She does remind me some of Gretchen, you know, just that like hardworking, you know, get down to business type of like strong woman attitude. And I do like that about her. I've worked for the state now for 17 years and, you know, we get emails from Gretchen. I think her dad worked for the state of Michigan or something. Like she sends us emails about like, just really like, and I don't know if it's her dad, but there's somebody like within her family that has, you know, worked for the state or just, she's just really proud of the state workers and, you know, really vocalizes that. And, respects hardworking people, and Haley kind of gives off that vibe.
So electability, auto industry, and the tough Midwestern kind of thing. That sounds about like her pitch. And the voters seem to have, they are saying back to us, I think, the things that Haley Stevens would be glad to know that those are the things that are resonating. What is this about the tough Midwestern Gretchen Whitmer type gal that you think like plays in Michigan?
Yeah. So I think, it's a few things. First of all, the Midwest, there's this image, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. You know, we work harder than everyone. We're tough. Things have been tough, ever since the decline of the steel industry in Pennsylvania, this, decline of the auto industry. It's been hard times that we see it through, where we do physical labor. You know, you mentioned the University of Michigan before the football games. They show a video before they when the game started, and it's narrated by James Earl Jones, who was a UM graduate. He has this line. He's like, you know, we're Midwestern value. I wish I could do a James Earl. Midwestern values like hard work. And it's just, you know, that is the Midwest image. And at the same time, like, it's a little like, and we're not flashy, right? It's a little bit of this, like, flipping back the sort of coastal arrogance on back on the coast. Yeah, you know, we're not New York, we're not California, we're not the cool kids, but we get stuff done, which is like her pitch. And, you know, we saw that actually, we've seen this play out online in just the last few weeks. Did you, I don't know how much you followed this, but, you know, there was this video, right, where she's addressing a small group. And she's like, you know, it's classic Hayley Stevens. Hayley Stevens is not a great communicator in the sort of traditional way. And she's a little awkward. And she's like, I'm going to meet them with joy and stick it to them.
Have I seen this clip? Yes, I've seen this clip because I live in the world and this clip has been everywhere.
I didn't want to assume. Yeah. So, you know, like, and the RNC is making fun of it and all of Abdul's supporters online, like, oh my God, she's so awkward. And I remember I saw that clip. I thought, that seems like Hayley Stevens, like a Michigan, you know, kind of exactly the kind of Michigan pitch. People are like, do people here really talk that way? Yes, people here really talk that way. And sure enough, right, it turned. And I think people here, a lot of people, not everybody, and so, you know, recognize that as an archetype. And, you know, Gretchen Whitmer has a Michigan accent, not quite as pronounced as Haley's, but she has one also. And, you know, Gretchen Whitmer is all about, for better or worse, depending on your perspective, you know, making deals, getting stuff done. She, you know, she's very bipartisan in ways that frustrate a lot of Democrats here. She has pretty close relationships with all the constituent groups, including the moneyed interest, including the, you know, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, things like that. And again, a lot of people don't like that about her. People who support, you know, progressives in particular, you know, they're not happy about this. You know, they're not happy that, you know, Gretchen Whitmer has sort of been supportive of data centers here. And I actually think that's going to be a big issue in this election. But the flip side is, you know, she does, like, you know, she kind of, she's a kind of middle of the road deal maker, get stuff done. And that is kind of what Hayley Stevens is. Maybe not quite so bipartisan. I mean, I think Hayley Stevens is a pretty reliable partisan Democrat. What you're going to get with Hayley Stevens is a mainstream Democratic vote, just like you got with Gary Peters, just like you got with Debbie Stabenow. But she is also somebody who will get in the room and make deals with Republicans. You know, she talks all the time about how she's been voted most effective legislator in the Democratic caucus. That is a true claim. There's a independent think tank that does this ratings. And that is based on the fact that she's got like this long list of very small, narrow, targeted bills, a couple big ones too, that were bipartisan, you know, brought money for manufacturers or helped this, you know, helped this group in Michigan or that group. And that's the kind of politician she is. And, you know, there's a, you know, she's got the same, it's the same plus minuses as you get with Gretchen Whitmer. You know, if you're an Abdul supporter, like, you know, you look at Hayley Stevens, like, oh, you know, she's too close to these corporate interests. She takes PAC money. But if you like Gretchen Whitmer, you look at her and you think, oh, I get this. I know this model. And this is someone who's going to, you know, she's going to sit down, roll up her sleeves and make some deals and talk to her constituents. And, you know, she's not going to change the world. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'll be happy with the representation.
Yeah. And I don't know if I've said this already, but it's worth noting that Gretchen Whitmer and Gary Peters both endorsed Hayley Stevens. And so Hayley is sort of racking up the local Michigan endorsements from the Democratic Party, while Abdul El-Sayed is picking up like the national endorsements, which is, again, I think leads me to the little bit of this frame of like, Abdul El-Sayed seems like something that progressives really gravitate to as like, we want this big national movement and we need champions and we want this guy to go be one of our champions in the Senate versus people who say, in Michigan, I want somebody who's going to bring home things for Michigan. And Hayley Stevens has this sort of workhorse, I can get things done, I can negotiate things here, and like, I'm very focused on Michigan. Now we've heard the bull cases for both candidates from the voters. Now I want to play you the negative sentiments from each side who preferred the other. So let's start with sort of the anti-El-Sayed people, which even isn't even that mean, but like, here is why, for people who are voting for Stevens or preferred Stevens, why they weren't that into El-Sayed.
The other guy I don't know too much about. He seems a little farther left, which I probably functionally agree with, but like, I don't know how well it would do in the current environment to send him to Washington. I think we need more people closer to the center on both sides to get Washington moving again.
Al-Sayed's whole thing is complaining about what he's mad about. If he went to the Senate, that's all he'd do. He'd showboat. He'd put in a bill for Medicare for all. It wouldn't pass. He's spent his whole campaign just going AIPAC, AIPAC, AIPAC. He's taking advantage of rage. He's trying to foment more rage. He's making our society sicker. I cannot be a part of that.
Something's got to change, so you might have to be radical because that's what you want to hear, pushing more to that side.
I met her at a gathering at one point, so very down to earth, you know, really approachable. And so that's, you know, I felt from him when I see him speak that he's kind of like standoffish, and I didn't like that about him.
I have strong opinions on reproductive rights. I read somewhere that he was, but now that I heard Luann mention something about what he'd said about women, I feel like now I have to look into that as well, to just double check, make sure that if there was something he said that I can align myself with that.
If I found out that there was went after for discrimination against a woman and there was a judgment and he was found guilty, I might have a problem with that. But right now I don't have the answer, and that did not happen as far as I can find right now. And these political, you have to take everything with a grain of salt, because these campaigns, they're dirty now, you know, and what do you, you know, you can't believe what you hear. You have to like look up and investigate everything, because there's, This is just dirty politics, and, you know, it's not good.
I fear that there's fear that's been put into people's heads about Muslims. And, you know, even though I know somebody mentioned that he has a white mom, unfortunately, I don't think a lot of people are going to look that far, and they're going to look at him as a Muslim. And again, I don't do that. I mean, I respect the man very much. He was a great director and did like a lot of great things, but I fear that people will just look at that. And like, if he were to be the candidate running against Mike Rogers, the people that kind of sit on the fence that, you know, don't necessarily always vote one party, you know, that could be like a situation where they'd look to the other party. I would love for college to be free, but like how, you know, just how that would work. So I do like Al-Sayed's views. It's just Stevens is realistically more electable. That's where I'm like, my vote is swaying, because like, do I vote for who I really want, or do I vote for who I think can actually win? So, and that's, I feel like Stevens is the person that is probably more likely to win, just my opinion.
So it's interesting, you know, kind of what I hear in there, it sounds like some of the things that are getting into the water about Abdul that are landing is maybe he's not a champion for women. Like maybe he's done maybe a little misogynist. And I think there's been some ads to that effect. The way he's talked about Haley Stevens, and I think the way he talked about Gretchen Whitmer in the past has lent itself to some of those things. There's also, they're concerned about both, I think, electability and like the pragmatic just concerns of, yeah, he says all this stuff. I like those things, but I'm not sure he's actually somebody who can get us closer to that. Do you hear that hesitation with voters that you're talking to?
Yeah, I do. So, and I want to put a pin in the ad thing, because I think that's worth its own discussion. So putting that aside for a second, and the accusations that he's disrespectful to women. I know I've been saying there's like three buckets of people who are against Abdul. So you have people who have a substantive problem with something about him, a position, something about his personality. They don't want to vote for him, period. So that's one group. Then you have a group who are sympathetic. They may like his ideas, but they don't necessarily think it translates to making a good senator, right? They're like, well, he's going to get in there. He's going to grandstand. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to work on actual legislation in the way Haley Stevens would, you know, right or wrong. I think that is a sort of second bucket. And then there's a third bucket of, you know, I really like him. I think he'd make a great senator, but I don't think he's going to win. And I want to keep this seat, you know, blue. It's much more important to me that we have a Democrat than, you know, which Democrat we have. And that last one in particular, I think, is weighing on the minds of a lot of these still undecided voters. Because I think people take that very seriously. And you know, there's just people understand the stakes of this election. They understand what a threat Donald Trump is. They do not want to lose the seat.
All right. Well, you mentioned an ad. So let's get into some of the ads and why we're hearing reflected back from voters what we are. So one of the ads that's been going around in the race says that El Sayed disrespects women. And he got in hot water by saying that Stevens couldn't string two sentences together. Also, there was he recently had kind of an ogre on a pike discourse. Let's see. Do we have this ad? Let's play it.
Abdul El Sayed has a long history of disrespecting women. He called Michelle Obama's work with children uninspired and ineffectual, claimed Gretchen Whitmer was bought and sold. In a discrimination lawsuit, El Sayed was accused of telling a woman he didn't want to work with anyone over 40. And an employee said he was offered payment to keep silent after witnessing El Sayed disparaging women. A history of disrespecting women. That's the real Abdul El Sayed.
Tough ad. And so just listening to, especially with some of the women in the group, feels like that's getting in there. Is that a clean hit or is it a dirty hit?
So I am really glad you brought up that advertisement. It has, you know, it has been everywhere. You know, I was away for a couple of days, got back to Michigan, and I had this sitting in my mailbox, you know, Gretchen Whitmer picture, how Abdul El Sayed is disrespectful to women. And I can tell you from interviews and what we just run in the focus group, this ad is penetrating. And here's the thing, not taking a position. This is not pro or anti any candidate, not pro or anti any issue that might be coming up. This is an incredibly deceptive ad. Really one of the worst I've seen in a while. You know, it makes 4 points. The first is this time when supposedly Abdul was disrespectful to Michelle Obama, which beyond just sort of resonating with women in Michigan, it's really a kind of heat-seeking missile. It's something that I think Black voters are going to hear and care about. And here's the thing. That was an op-ed he wrote in 2010 or 2012. I can't remember what year, but it was an op-ed about her, you know, physical fitness campaign. It was a respectful op-ed. It was about policy. It had nuance. He actually said it was commendable. He just said he didn't think it was going to work. You can agree or disagree with what he was saying at the time, but it was not disrespectful to women. It was not disrespectful to Michelle Obama. Then there's this example of him criticizing Gretchen Whitmer. Well, that's when he was running against her in the 2018 primaries. It was a heated primary. He was attacking her the same way he attacks, you know, Mike Rogers today as being, you know, connected to special interest. And you can agree or disagree with what he was saying there on the merits, but it was not disrespectful to women. It was an argument about money and politics. The third example is about a lawsuit that was against the health department while he was there. It was not about him. There's a fourth one, which involves a dispute with a former employee. I don't want to litigate that here. I don't think it's been fully vetted, but, you know, at best is something that's not yet been, I think, sort of fully sort of, in, you know, kind of aired out that we really know what happened. And so the idea, you know, there are arguments. People thought his comments about Haley Stevens not stringing two sentences together was disrespectful in a way that sounded disrespectful to women. And he has a bit of a bro affect that I think, you know, you can interpret how you want. And that's all fair game. But, you know, this idea that these, that what is in this ad shows him to be disrespectful to women, I just think is really unfounded. It's a really deceptive ad, and it is everywhere right now.
So I want to do the AIPAC ad, but I'm going to use, first I want to do, because I think this is going to get us there. I want to talk about the negative sentiments that you hear about Haley Stevens. And I think you're going to hear a quickly recurring theme. Let's listen.
My biggest thing, and I'm a big person in terms of money and where's the money coming from and where's the money going. I feel like if you're taking money from someone, you should be able to explain why you're taking money from someone and your justifications for taking money from that someone. I don't accept money from people I don't agree with. And I don't assume that other people accept money from people that they don't agree with. And if they do, then I think that's a compromised person.
AIPAC is a little bit of a problem. And I'm like with Ron, you have to... You can't just kind of slough it off and say that it's okay that you took it. I want to kind of know where it's coming from, why you took it, what your thoughts are. So yeah, that would be a big one for me.
I've seen Haley Stevens, obviously, but
It's just like there was a little bit of runaround with her, and obviously everyone recognizes her name, but it's good to have kind of like a fresh new face going in and being able to try to help fix Detroit, or I keep saying Detroit, but the state of Michigan. And he has a good just character about him that he would get something like that done.
I feel like Stevens seems like she was like a little bit bought out by the corporate like wing of the party.
Any corporations in particular that you've been hearing about with Stevens?
I don't know why. I feel like I've heard the defense contractors, but maybe that's not correct.
Haley Stevens is my U.S. Rep. So I like a lot of the things she's done. I do worry that she's just a little bit like, I kind of feel like, you know, it goes Haley, Mallory, and then Abdul, like in terms of like centrist to left leaning. So, yeah, I mean, she's done some good stuff. She's too centrist to me. I also like she's been I've seen recently like she's proposed some, you know, federal legislation like trying to rein in Trump. And it feels a little like political theater because like she knows it's not going to move and she's doing it just to like say that she did it, which like I guess someone but she's not been doing it with the other Democrats. She's been kind of going off on her own. And I don't like that because it feels performative.
I think with Stevens, the AIPAC thing just completely threw me out. Like, I don't like that she's endorsed by them. So I was like, okay, whatever.
We heard AIPAC mentioned a number of times in there. And because it was coming up pretty frequently, we asked the voters in all of these groups, how they talked about AIPAC, like what they thought about AIPAC and outside money. Because just to be clear, the United Democracy Project has spent over $20 million in this race on behalf of Stevens. I mean, $20 million would be a splash in a general election, but in Michigan, but like in a primary, it's a lot of money. Let's listen to how people talked about AIPAC.
If I found out like my favorite candidate was taking AIPAC money, then I'd be like, okay, well, where do the other candidates stand? And like, you know, is there someone similar? Like, yeah, there would be a lot of factors. It's not hard line, but it would upset me.
I want to definitely make the point that I'm not saying that, oh, if this candidate takes money from Jewish groups, I'm not voting. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying AIPAC specifically, because if we look at the history of the money and what they have been funding, I need them to speak to why you're taking that money. And I feel like for that particular group, that information should be clarified. If for no other reason than they know this is a very big talking point for their constituents and they need to have something towards it.
I don't like if somebody has, you know, a better, I guess, I just don't like that. There's so many people like the elites and running the world, and it's just really creepy and icky. And I think everybody should have a fair chance.
It almost feels like somebody's buying a person's vote toward, you know, their wants and needs. And yeah, the world is very money driven.
Israel is a part of AIPAC, and they're an outside country influencing our elections. I don't like that. I want, you know, our money and the political contributions to be funded from either individual voters or organizations within the United States. Like we talk about like big money and like the elites, right? Like what hidden agenda is there for Israel to be funding this candidate, right?
My one thing with Haley Stevens, the AIPAC, because she specifically mentioned how she supports Israel. Well, I support Israel. I support the people. I don't support Netanyahu. And Netanyahu is the AIPAC. And for her, and she almost got, and when they interviewed her, like kind of crappy about it, you know, with her answer. And that bothers me because Palestine bothers me. And I don't want anybody that's beholden to Netanyahu.
So I guess I'll ask this a very straightforward question. Do you think this race would be turning out differently if Stevens didn't have the AIPAC baggage?
Yeah, maybe. you know, I think it's been a very big issue in the campaign. And I think when you listen to these comments, I think it really hit home for me why AIPAC has become a big issue. For some people, obviously, it's about the substantive questions about Israel, what has happened in Gaza. And for a lot of people, that is the issue. But for there's a second universe, a broader universe of people for whom AIPAC, taking money from AIPAC or being supported by AIPAC has become a sort of proxy for being, you know, in the back pocket of wealthy interests. You know, it is the big bad lobbying force out there that is buying politicians, trying to buy your vote with advertisements, and people don't like that. Now, it's whenever I say that, like, I try to be really careful that, you know, it is so easy to move from that kind of conversation into a conversation that gets really quickly into anti-Semitic tropes about who's controlling politics. And, you know, it's just as someone in Michigan watching this, it's kind of painful to watch, you know, this conversation dip in and out of anti-Semitism. Not, I'm not saying this is from Abdul al-Sayed, but just in the way the conversation has evolved. And yet at the same time, you know, if you do care about money in politics, I mean, as you said, this is a lot of money being dumped on this race. So it really is a factor. And I do think it has hurt Haley Stevens, you know, with a lot of the voters who ended up voting for Abdul al-Sayed. Now, I think most of them are there already. I think if you're a voter who cares about this, you made up your mind about this weeks ago. You know, you like, I don't think that's a lot of the undecided voters there left, but it definitely, I think, is part of her baggage. And, you know, it's what's good about Haley Stevens is also what's bad about Haley Stevens, you know, depending on your view. She's a system politician, right? She knows how to work the levers of power. When you're one of those politicians who knows how to work the levers of power, you probably have some cozy relationships with some interest groups.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that's interesting to me, because AIPAC comes up quite a bit as we are doing. It's so funny. Sometimes I want to be clear that, you know, it's always, people are always like, voters think this. And I'm like, no, I always want to be like, voters don't think one thing. In Democratic primaries right now, where we have been talking to a lot of people, you know, swing voters, AIPAC doesn't come up. But among Democratic primary voters, it comes up quite a bit. And it has become probably the biggest specific litmus test of this campaign season, where it is the thing that voters will say, if AIPAC is for them, I'm against them. And that's my rubric for making these political decisions. The other thing about AIPAC that seems to, and I think it's shown by these clips, is that sometimes it's about people's feelings about Israel, but sometimes it's people's feelings about PACs. Sometimes it's people's, like, AIPAC has become like the Coke brand of Coca-Cola brand of money in politics, right? That is, it's become this sort of the stand-in, at least in this cycle, for people who say, I don't want outside money. I don't want the big money in politics. I don't want taking money from PACs that are, you know, it's got all of that. And so I always think those are the toughest issues for people to deal with, because as you mentioned, right, sometimes there's anti-Semitic tropes. And so there's the anti-Semitism can kind of creep in through one vector, but through another vector, it's just straight up money in politics I don't like. In others, it's straight up like, I don't like that we send so much money abroad, and it's almost an America first. I hear that strain in there. Like, this should be being spent here. It's also just about political corruption in the way that voters view it, which is candidates that get, they feel like are bought and paid for by special interests of whatever the special interests are. Sort of doesn't matter what they are. It's just they don't like the special interests. And so people with lots of different feelings can tag in to the overall AIPAC conversation and feel like it stands in for something they don't like. And now that has a ton of resonance nationally, is a massive amount of money that they have spent that is influencing people to vote for Haley Stevens. Is it worth it to then take the hit of, because I think a lot of candidates should be thinking about this particular trade-off, is the money that allows you to buy ads and influence and persuade people, is it worth the baggage of, I get a lot of money from these particular special interests that people can use to kind of hang around my neck?
Yeah, you know, I wish I knew the answer to that question. Maybe we'll find out on primary day. I mean, I would say all I know for sure at this point is that both are powerful. Again, it has hurt Haley Stevens, the association with AIPAC. It has hurt her with a lot of people in the Democratic primary. A lot of people in the Democratic primary are tuned into this. And she lost those voters. She lost them early, but she lost them. And at the same time, you know, as we were discussing, the money that is coming in behind these ads is clearly helping her. I think it's, you know, especially again, you know, when this money is behind an attack ad, you know, tying Abdul El-Sayed to criticizing Michelle Obama. That is like a heat-seeking missile to Black voters in Michigan. And, you know, he's, you know, he will probably lose votes over that. So I don't know. I mean, as a strategic question, I don't know which is right. I would just say that there's definitely both at play.
As we wrap up, that's all the sound we have. But I want to ask you now to put on your kind of pundit hat instead of your wonk hat. Yep, got to switch them. And to help me understand, because I think we've got all the information that lays out the contours of this race. Like, what are the big issues? How do people view both candidates? But as we come into the finish here, like, what are the stakes of this race? I think there's multiple stakes at play here. One of them, of course, is it's very important for Democrats to keep this seat. And like, in terms of the Democrats map, like, this is an essential keep. And so as you get closer, I do often think electability comes into sharper focus the closer you get to the end of a primary. Do you think that it is common knowledge, or that it is the common sentiment that Haley Stevens is more electable than Abdul El-Sayed? And, you know, I saw somebody released a poll yesterday. I don't know how seriously to take a lot of these polls. Polling out of Michigan, so noisy. And like, the swings are wild. I'm a little skeptical. He was losing to Mike Rogers in the head-to-head by 10 points, whereas she was just narrowly beating him. I'm not sure that's true either. Who do you think is most electable, or and who do you think the voters think in Michigan is most electable?
So first of all, I'm glad you said that about the polls. I don't think anyone knows how to model this electorate, and it's just too unpredictable. I don't know who's most electable. I've been saying this all along. I think it's hard to be sure. You know, put a gun to my head, I would probably say I think Abdul El-Sayed is probably the riskier candidate. I mean, it's not hard to imagine him being attacked over positions, some of which haven't really come up in the primary, right? Because they're not going to come up in a Democratic primary. You know, his position, I've written about this, you know, on, you know, he has said anybody in his ideal Medicare for all world, anybody who pays taxes should get healthcare. And people say, well, is that included someone who's undocumented? He said, yeah, if they pay taxes, they should be able to get it. Now, as a healthcare guy, I think that's a very defensible position. As a political guy, that seems risky. Having said that, he's an A-plus communicator. I mean, he is a gifted candidate. And he also really, I mean, there's a lot of ways he is a really good foil for Rogers. I mean, he can really go after Rogers on the corporate contributions. He can really go after him on healthcare. So, you know, I hesitate to be sort of definitive about that because I just don't know. I will say voters and the political class, for the most part, is convinced that Haley Stevens is more electable, or at least that Abdul El-Sayed is the riskier candidate. Among voters, I think they're still weighing that. You actually hear a decent number of voters who think he's the more electable. I think they feel like, well, he's more authentic. He can really run on this, you know, money again, you know, people against power, people against money, maybe. I think though you also hear a lot of voters, and you heard them in this focus group, both, you know, saying, oh, you know, I don't know, he's pretty out there on the left and he's going around with Hassan Piker. I mean, they didn't talk about that, but, you know, he's got those associations. I don't know if this guy can get elected. This is Michigan. It's a purple state. Don't take a chance. So I think voters are weighing this. I think, and especially among the undecideds who are probably, you know, I think that's where I think this is a close race. And I think their undecideds will, you know, how they break will determine how this goes in the end. And I do think they're weighing electability and trying to figure it out. And it's not, I find it personally to be a tough question to answer with any confidence, but you know, that's me. I'm not really good. The pundit hat doesn't really work well on my head. So.
Part of the reason that this race has become such a national flashpoint, besides the fact that everybody got bored with Maine once Plattner was out, is that the current fracturing of the Democratic Party into two factions, one that is much more far left, or I don't even know, like some, in some ways it's DSA adjacent, in some way you might call it more progressive, more far left, I don't know. And the other one's more like, people say establishment, people say centrist. I think all of these monikers are ill-fitting in one regard or another. But you can see a situation where if Abdul Sayed wins the primary, goes on and loses the general election, the sort of far left of the party will be dealt one of its most discrediting blows. And on the flip side, if Haley Stevens wins and the primary and loses in the general, like if either of them lose in the general, the other side will use it as a, to have national implications for which faction is better, or is more dominant, or has, is the most electable. That's one part of it that I'm interested in your thoughts on. The second piece is, because this is such a, as people have said in the comments, in the focus groups, such a dirty race. Like people are so mad at each other. Again, not some just like regular people who are only kind of tapped in, but people who are really tapped in, they're mad. They have locked in on either side of this. And so like, do you see, because the uncommitted vote in Michigan played a big role in why Donald Trump won Michigan in 2024. People sat out because they were upset about things like Gaza. Do people sit out? If Haley wins, do Sayed supporters sit out and say, we're not going to support her, and vice versa? Like, is it that level of tension now where people, because of the factionalization going on in the Democratic politics, would rather lose the seat than lose the conversation?
Yeah. So on the first point, I agree with the way that this would be interpreted. So I agree with all that. On the second point, will people sit out? Maybe. You know, I would say on both sides, to be fair to people who, you know, feel as, I think it'd be less about, I don't want to lose the conversation, and more that just, there are some people who feel so strongly about some of these issues. They just, it will, you know, they're just going to be incredibly angry. So I guess that is losing the conversation. But less out of spite and more out of just, you know, it really bothers me. There's some people it's going to be really bother them to vote for someone like Haley Stevens, or really bother them to vote for like, Abdul Sayed. Having said all that, I do think, there's barely enough time to heal the rift if, you know, enough people step up, you know, and we've seen this ritual, you know how it goes, right? So, you know, you have to get the big guns in here, right? So, you know, Barack Obama will come in and bring the party together. You know, Michelle Obama will come in, you know, we'll get the, you know, the people who have sort of universal respect across the Democratic Party spectrum. Whoever loses this primary is going to have to endorse the winner. Obviously, someone like Alyssa Slotkin, who has not endorsed so far. She's the one big name in the sort of big party statewide establishment who has not endorsed. Obviously, if Abdul Sayed wins, then Gretchen Whitmer needs to get behind him. If Haley Stevens wins, you know, getting, you know, maybe they don't, I don't know that having Bernie or AOC behind, but, you know, at least getting some of the sort of progressives in the state behind them. You know, there's a chance to do some healing there, but it's going to be tough. People are pretty bitter about this. And people, again, I want to be fair to them. People feel strongly about this. A lot of this is at the level of principle. They have strong feelings. I understand that. And you know, that's, you know, at the same time, at the end of the day, if whatever issue, you know, on virtually any issue that is dividing this primary, it's really not a close call between whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be and Mike Rogers on the Republican side.
I'll agree with you there. Jonathan Cohn, thank you so much for joining us. You were excellent, both as wonk and pundit. And thanks to all of you for listening to another episode of the Focus Group Podcast. We'll be back next week. But in the meantime, remember to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to The Bulwark on YouTube, and become a Bulwark Plus member at thebulwark.com. We'll see you next time.